our founders have had to leverage open source technology and give back to open source. So if you look at our UI of our cloud management platform, which leverages many open source frameworks and libraries, the UI or the CSS framework itself is Material UI. If you go to Material UI's website, look at who the number one donor is to Material UI, and you'll see Do It International. And so I think our founders, as the company has grown, have not only supported and embraced open source, but even given back to the open source community.
Hello and welcome to Committing to Cloud Native, the podcast where we talk about open source, the cloud, and everything in between. Super excited to have our guest on today. Before we get to introducing him, I want to introduce the other panelists. Besides me, Richard Littower, we have on this podcast today, Justin Dorfman. Justin, how are you?
Great, Richard. How are you?
I'm doing good. Good to have you here. Always fun to share a podcast with you. Justin, what are the updates for CurryFence today?
I'm glad you asked that, Richard. So we have the 1.4.0 roadmap. It's complete. And if you look in the show notes, you'll have a link to the milestone on GitHub. It'll also be a blog post. I just haven't gotten to it yet. Our Jekyll site is finally live. So if you find a typo or something that bugs you, you can just click in the bottom, say, edit this page and make a pull request. And last but not least, our merch is now shipping. So you can email community@curryfence.io and I'll hook you up. That's all I got for this week.
So we have Mike Spar. Mike is the staff cloud architect at Do It International. He's calling today from Montana, Missoula, I believe, which is super awesome. How are you doing today, Mike?
Very good. Thank you. And thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on here. Thank you for coming. So you have a long history, not only with the cloud, but also with programming. You started programming at age 10, I believe, on a Tandy TRS-80. Can you talk about that a bit?
Sure. I was lucky enough that my aunt was a professional artist and my family business always had computers in the family business. And every time she would get a new computer, she would donate her computer to the business and then the business would donate its oldest one to me. And so at a very early age, I was introduced to computers and I got hand-me-downs. They might have been two generations old, but I was able to play with computers at a really early age. And I don't recall how my dad got that Tandy TRS-80, but I was, I guess, enthralled with it right away. And I remember we had a dot matrix printer hooked up to it and a little trackpad. And I taught myself basic programming and Logo. Those were the two languages. And it was just fascinating writing a program where you could make sounds come out of the computer or change the colors on the screen. And so that's kind of where my obsession with software began.
It was the same with me. I used to dumpster dive for old computer parts. And then I would have like a bevy in my basement on which I installed Linux and everything. Didn't know what to do with it, which I think is the opposite of you. Because after, you know, working in web development from a very young age and figuring out how AOL works and working in the 2 megabytes of free space there, you moved on to live on multiple continents, grew 5 privately held and 1 publicly held company, been a C-suite, all the suites ever since. Can you talk about how you sort of ended up at Do It International as part of that story?
Sure. It's, as you stated, it's been a crazy but rewarding journey. And growing up in my family business, ironically, I started out working in the office and working in the repair shop. My family owned a towing company and an auto repair shop and a truck leasing company, and then eventually added the property leasing. And so growing up and kind of being groomed by my grandfather to eventually take over the business, I worked in every position at an early age at the company, but I always gravitated towards technology. And like I said, on the side, I'd been working with computers. And so in the late 90s, about halfway through college, internet service providers were starting to flourish and it was dial-up internet days still. And there were a couple main providers in Montana. One of them was advertising for position in their web development department. And I'd been building web pages all through high school and just doing it on my spare time and free time. So I shared my web page and I had registered my own domain and whatnot. And immediately got a call back and they offered me more money than my family would pay me. And I'd been working for my family for a long time. And it was kind of a no-brainer. It's like, what, you're gonna pay me to play on the computer more than my family paid me? This is a dream. And so I started working for the ISP and then eventually built the software division of the company. It was later acquired, and then my division merged with another to form a new company. And this was all during college. So nearing the end of college, there were recruiters all around the country coming to our campus, and they were representing Anderson Consulting, Microsoft, Cisco Systems, a variety of companies. And I was encouraged to talk to them, even though I was really happy with what I was doing. And lo and behold, I kind of got, interested in, at the time, Anderson Consulting, which became Accenture, because all those other companies that were interviewing were their customers. So I'm like, well, gosh, I could work with one company and I get to work with all those companies. So it's the best of both worlds, right? And so I joined, at the time, Anderson Consulting, but then we changed our name to Accenture. And then we went through rapid growth and an IPO. And I was working out of the Bay Area, but my customers were overseas. So I lived in Helsinki, worked at Nokia, lived in London, worked at British Telecom, and then several other customers around the US. But my entrepreneurial roots, given my family background, led me back to startups. And so I left the consulting world and started building software startups and built an e-commerce startup, built a mobile marketing startup, a couple others, and had gone through the raising angel money, raising venture capital. And one of them was acquired. When I joined the acquiring company as CTO, we then acquired a couple other companies. And so we were facilitating merging multiple companies together. And that's where the cloud kind of came into play, and we'll lead into do it. So as we merged multiple companies together, that's when the importance of cloud technology really emerged, because we had companies with different technology stacks and engineers with different talent or experience. And the only way to bring those companies together, or an easy way to bring those companies together, was to put them onto a common platform. And that's when I was introduced to containerization and containerizing workloads, because we could have some companies that might be .NET stack. Some of them might be LAMP, Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP. And then others might be more modern with React and NoSQL databases. And so each of them could run independently, but they could all run on the same platform. So through that experience in merging my own companies together and moving them to the cloud, I was kind of full circle. I was, contacted by a former Accenture colleague and a longtime friend. And he was working for a fintech company based in the Bay Area, but most of the teams were overseas, and said, well, we're trying to modernize our company. Would you come help lead engineering? And then eventually we want to do the exact same thing you did at your previous companies and go to the cloud. And so I decided that that was a great opportunity. Plus I could work together with a friend of mine. And so I joined this fintech company out of the Bay Area. And unbeknownst to me, we had production, issues. And so those plans for moving to the cloud were accelerated. And because of my experience, I kind of stepped up, even though my role was leading. We had about 200 people in engineering in four countries. And so I stepped up and said, okay, I'll lead our cloud migration and put a team together. We'll do a POC. And during that process, we were evaluating Google and AWS. And when we started evaluating Google, they introduced me to Doit. So my exposure to Doit was actually first as a customer. And so I was a customer of Doit's. And that's when I met several of their team members. We really got along great. And through that journey, really, I became impressed with the deep technical talent of the team. And my company was acquired at the end of 2019. And so shortly after we completed our technical and people integration in the spring of 2020, I left that company and joined Doit. So it was kind of an interesting trajectory, but I hadn't heard of Doit before I was a customer. And then afterwards, I loved the company, loved the people so much that after I was free to choose my next adventure, I decided to join the team.
Yeah. So the thing that caught my eye when Zuri sent me the link to Doit, because at first I thought Doit was like the Home Depot competitor. We have one in Los Angeles, so that's what I thought. But then I went to the website and I was like, oh, okay, you're working with the CNCF on building Kubernetes. Can you go into that? What part of Kubernetes are you working on? Or is it just the entire project? How is Doit involved?
So as I'm fairly new with the company, I can give you a little bit of history. So one of our founders was one of 80 ambassadors with the CNCF. And given that Doit had been involved with cloud for, I think, just over 10 years now. I think it was founded in 2011. So we're just approaching that 10-year mark. Even before Google had a cloud offering, the company had been involved, you know, from the G Suite days to the App Engine to BigQuery and then eventually Mature Cloud. And so a lot of our engineers came from other companies and other industries and regularly participate in open source. And I'm proud to say that recently, even AWS had announced resources for migrating from Kubernetes 1.15 to 1.16. And the tools that they recommended globally were tools that were built by some of our engineers.
Oh, that's cool. And you're an AWS partner, so there's some kind of connection there. So it's pretty cool. What is the name of the ambassador? You skipped his name, his or her name.
Vadim Soloveay, who was the original founder of the company.
Got it. And he's still part of the company working with engineering and all that stuff.
Yeah, he's working with everything. He's very hands-on, very technical, and involved day-to-day.
How many employees are at Doit?
I think we're approaching 200 employees now.
Oh, wow.
And the company has grown rapidly. When I joined, it was 70 people.
Oh.
And in a year, we're now approximately 200.
That's amazing. You and I are kind of in similar situations. We're both in the United States. Reblaze is headquartered in Tel Aviv as well. So, and we're growing, you know, like every day there's like a new email saying, welcome X, you know? So it's when you're talking about that, I'm like, oh, wow, we're like kind of in the same, we're same shoes. Another thing that I saw on your site that really caught my eye is Prod Ops. What is Prod Ops?
So ProdOps is a recent acquisition, and I believe very well known, especially by the folks in Israel and in Tel Aviv. But what it is, it's a project-based arm of the company now that specializes in DevOps, SRE best practices for the cloud, and then aiding in project success and organizational preparedness. And ultimately, what that means is, I guess, taking a step backwards, Doit is very unique in the cloud space insofar as when customers sign up with us, we have a cloud management platform. So we have an entire software engineering division, and we have a cloud management platform that allows them to manage multiple clouds all in one place. So a single pane of glass. And we've got AI technology built in, custom reporting. And this was born over years and years of requests from customers to say, well, the billing information or the reports or the analytics that are provided by Google or AWS, don't tell me X, don't tell me Y, don't tell me Z. Can you guys help me figure this out? And so we actually built a product that rides atop the clouds to help people make sense of their cloud spend, their cloud budgeting, costing, anomaly detection, et cetera. So the ProdOps team is specializing in project-based work, but other customers, they purchase their cloud services through Doit. And then we have partnerships with Google, Amazon, Microsoft. And so we have a discount based on our consumption and our volume. And so that's where we make our money. So all customers get all of our services at no cost. So they get our products, they get our support. And oftentimes they get better pricing for their cloud, all at no extra cost, just by using us for their cloud services. And traditionally, the business model doesn't really support project-based consulting with project management and staff augmentation and whatnot. The recent acquisition of ProdOps has added a team, processes, and tooling to potentially support more long-lived project-based work.
So it sounds like Doit International is really just a really large consulting business that helps clients figure out how they can do AWS, Azure, whatever cloud needs they have. One of the things I'm curious about is you also mentioned on the site and just in general, machine learning. How do you optimize machine learning for your clients? And how is Doit International different than other people in the space in this field?
I think one key differentiator is just the talent pool. And that was actually one of the reasons I was attracted to the company, because that was an area where I wanted to learn more as well. And Doit is very fortunate to have been founded in Tel Aviv. And some of our engineering talent in Australia and the UK, in Tel Aviv and here in the United States, are experts in machine learning and artificial intelligence. One of them, his name is God, G-A-D. And so we make a lot of jokes about that internally, but he is actually a Kaggle competition master. And so Kaggle, for those that don't know, is essentially a place for companies to submit paid contests for developers around the world to try to solve their problems. And so they might put up bounties of 5,000, 10,000, 25,000. I think Netflix had a really famous one for their recommender algorithm, which was like $1 million bounty if somebody could come up with a better recommendation. And so some of our team members are actually winners of some of these competitions, if that gives you an idea of the depth of talent that we have on our staff. And couple that with a decade of cloud experience and evolving with the cloud vendors as they've matured their offerings. When companies come to us, oftentimes the data scientists might have great experience in the algorithms or great experience in a framework like TensorFlow or Spark or even Scikit. But putting those pieces together and making something work in production to solve a business problem is often very difficult, and you don't know what pieces to put together. By working with us, our team of experts not only have the deep technical knowledge all the way down to the mathematics and the algorithm level, but also the cloud experience and how to put those together to get that innovation into the market. And I think that's that magic piece. Oftentimes you have data scientists that are great munging data and working with data warehousing, but maybe not making commercial use of that data. And so by us having the talent that spans the entire life cycle, that helps companies be more successful in leveraging machine learning.
Kind of wish I hadn't switched from computational linguistics and I'd kept with the ML stuff. You know, that'd be kind of a ton of cool stuff in that area. So,
well, and that's definitely not my area of expertise, which is why I'm tapping into the brain trust that we have here. I'm building a startup in AI ML space, so I need to learn it, and I can tap into my colleagues to basically help me learn. But I'm one of those ones that pays it forward. So if you see a couple of recent blog posts that I published, was when I was learning ML and I open sourced everything except for a few pieces of the startup that I mentioned. I open sourced it all, and then I wrote a 2-part series that basically teaches engineers ML. Because yep. You've got the data scientists, it's not that hard, but the biggest difficulty is the terminology gap.
Yep.
And so if you had to put together like inference versus a return, and instead of an input or an argument, it could be a feature. So oftentimes it's just the terminology that makes it hard, but it's very accessible. And so what I try to do is create like a Rosetta that helps engineers understand data science. And so they can both speak the same language. And then I show them how to build a continuous feedback loop, continuously updating ML model that retrains itself every time you accept user feedback. And I open sourced all that. And
that's awesome.
Plus it was fun to code in Golang. And I think I did Python, Golang, and React. And so staying technically current is kind of fun for me too.
So Kaggle's really interesting because, I mean, it has like 6 million users, right? So winning there isn't trivial. What I'm curious about is, I think that sites like Kaggle depend upon open source. If the competition entries are closed source, no one can access them, no one can see them, and it's just not that interesting. If they're licensed so that no one can use it, it's also not going to be that useful. So one of the questions I have is, what is Doit International doing in terms of open source, right? If you have people who come from that field, how do you commit to cloud native, as it were? Not to ask a leading question.
I think the reason the company has been able to grow so efficiently, I believe we were a $100 million company with 30 people, wow. If you can imagine that. And then now we've grown significantly. So in order to do that, our founders have had to leverage open source technology and give back to open source. So if you look at our UI of our cloud management platform, which leverages many open source frameworks and libraries, the UI or the CSS framework itself is Material UI. If you go to Material UI's website, look at who the number one donor is to Material UI, and you'll see Doit International. And so I think our founders, as the company has grown, have not only supported and embraced open source, but even given back to the open source community.
Not just with code, but with dollars. I've always found it that open source contributions have to come from the top, or else none of the engineers care. It has to build that culture at the top down. And that's when I've noticed just throughout my career is when my boss is the one that's saying, we need to do this, that's when the best contributions come through. So I'm really happy to hear that confirmation bias from you.
Yes. And most of our engineers, if you visit our blog, oftentimes our engineers are doing experiments during their R&D time and then sharing those with the world. It also helps us because if customers are asking for help on one problem, if we figure it out, oftentimes we might blog about it. And so other people that might run into the same problem benefit. But then, as I mentioned earlier, even AWS recently acknowledged one of the tools created by one of our engineers, which is open sourced and provided for the world. And that's called Kube No Trouble. And it's a tool to check for deprecated APIs when you're trying to upgrade Kubernetes. And
that's good.
We have another tool called Iris. And Iris allows Google Cloud customers to, replicate functionality that's on AWS that automatically tags their resources. And so our open source tool called Iris is kind of an answer for a void that Google Cloud had. And so customers that were experienced with AWS said, well, gosh, all my stuff gets tagged. How do I do that here? We said, okay, well, we'll build it and then we'll just give it to the world. And so we've been a regular contributor to open source. And oftentimes our tools, even before we meet like a potential customer and we'll be on a call with their engineers, they'll find out during the call, like, oh, wait a minute, we use your guys' tools for this and this before we even met. And they never heard of Doit before.
It's the greatest feeling in the world. I've been in that situation where, you know, our company name was, you know, no one really knew it, but they're like, oh, you guys make that? Oh, I know you. So it's cool.
Like you mentioned, open source, I guess, championship and leadership from the top. One of your executives has recently decided to open source your latest security product. And I think that's fantastic as well. That's CurryFence, right?
CurryFence. Yep. I love CurryFence. And that's what I'm going back to again is it has to come from the hip. You know, it has to come from your boss to be able to do it, because there is a lot of resources, human resources and money and just time going into this project. And we've donated it to a foundation, the CNCF. It's a lot of work, but the amount of open source that Reblaze uses is just, we're returning the favor. That's not the last project that we will be creating. We have some other ones coming up, but yeah, I'm really proud of the work that we're doing at CurryFence. And yeah, it's going to be really interesting. You know, we're starting to get people coming into our Slack channel and I don't know them. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so cool. You know, it's a really exciting project. And I'm just really lucky that I was able to join. And yeah, I just can't wait to see what next week brings. You know, it's always something cool. So,
and the need for security in today's age, especially as people are going more remote, is only going to increase. So I think you guys are very well positioned for kind of the wave ahead. And if I were to predict the biggest push in tech, it's going to be healthcare and security. And you guys are right in there.
Let's bring it back to Doit. No offense to CurryFence, which is super awesome. But I want to make sure we focus on the guests this time. So totally. One of the questions I have for you based upon your experience, and we talked about your long history working with code, the fact that you've been an architect for a long time, as well as, you know, still knowing how to hack things on your own, right? You're a programmer in your own right. is how you've interfaced with open source over the past 20 years and how that interface has actually helped you enter the cloud space more. Open source is often a method that causes maintainers to burn out and or, you know, fail to maintain all their projects. And sometimes it's really tough to do it. But you seem to be able to not only know what open source is, be a proponent and like a champion of it at your companies, but also to manage and wrangle hundreds of engineers and to do that successfully at multiple companies. And that seems to me like a really exceptional skill. So I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about how you've been able to do that.
Well, thanks for acknowledging. I would say for me, what's always been, I guess, my recipe for success with working with engineers is being an engineer myself. And I think oftentimes you have technical experts, and if they're led by somebody that doesn't know their world or doesn't understand things from their perspective, then they can tune out fairly quickly. And so I think that's one of the advantages is being in a leadership position, but being a technical leader. Like I mentioned, our founder of our company is hands-on, technical, amazingly brilliant, knows all the clouds, technologies, and open source as well. And I think
what's his name again?
Vadim Soloway. And I think that's the trick. When you're trying to attract very bright, very technical, oftentimes type A personality people, you need to be able to earn that respect by having as much technical chops as they do, or at least enough to understand and create an environment where they can thrive. And I think that's the trick, is by being an engineer myself, it's made it more possible to work with other engineers and make them successful because I've been in their shoes or I'm still in their shoes.
You said that you got this R&D time. Is that like the 20% time?
Similar to Google's 20% time, correct.
Okay.
So when we have different teams at Doit International, the team that I'm part of is our cloud engineering. We call it CRE, or customer reliability engineering. And this team only recruits senior, experienced architects that come out of industry. So the people that we're bringing on board have anywhere from 10 to 20 years experience, multiple startups, sometimes CTO roles, you name it. And one of the attractiveness of joining the team is we kind of split up the workload almost a third. So a third of the time is customer interaction, kind of pre-sales, architecture review, et cetera. Another third is cloud support. And so when customers request help on the cloud, our team essentially acts like Stack Overflow. So you post a question and our team answers it, but you don't have all those layers that you have to get through before you get to an expert. It's immediate. And then the other third, to make sure that they can still stay current and actually add value to the other two thirds, is R&D. And so the expectation is you're going to be doing your special projects. You're going to be creating new innovations, participating in open source, because that's what keeps you relevant in order to be able to add value to customers. And so it's a very unique opportunity for people that oftentimes are brilliant, work in a company, but they're so busy with the day-to-day minutia of their job that they don't have the opportunity to stay current on technology or go master something. And so oftentimes some of these people said, you know what, I'll give up the title and whatnot and join this group, because now I can go deep in machine learning and become the best machine learning expert or the best InfoSec cloud architect there is. And they have that opportunity and do it. It's not a guarantee of a third, but it kind of works out about a third is the normal day-to-day for the CRE team.
Well, you answered my question, because I was like, you hire a bunch of CTOs and I'm like, how does that ego thing work with the title? But that's it. The thing is, they want to work with the best of the best and on really cool stuff. So who cares about the title at the end of the day? It really doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it's an amazing group of people. And that's what I was exposed to as a customer. And I saw the level of talent. And in my role at my previous company, I was the one teaching the teams overseas on how to modernize our technology and kind of drive us towards that journey. And when I started interacting with Doit, it was one of the rare times that almost every interaction, I learned something new from them. I'm like, man, these guys are amazing. And I'm just fortunate to be able to be part of that team now.
So you're awesome. Someone who's super interested in learning in general and looking towards the next thing. Otherwise, you wouldn't be where you are now. And as you just said, it's something you'd prioritize at your company. What's next for you? What are you super excited about at the moment?
Well, just the growth of our company, which is exciting because I've built companies. And as you guys have known in your past experience, there's always that balance of funding and runway and market validation and whatnot. Well, our company is already very mature, very established, very profitable, but it still operates like a startup. And so you've kind of got the best of both worlds. You've got the stability, but you've got the agility, and we run very efficient. And so for me, it's exciting because, like I said, when I joined, we were 70 people. We're now around 200 people and we're growing and we're doubling year over year. And so where I can contribute is I've been in some of those larger organizations or led larger teams. And so as we grow, there's opportunity to step into a different set of shoes and say, oh, okay, well, now we're facing these challenges. I've been there. I can help out with this. There's so many opportunities that it's still very exciting. But on the side with my free time, one of the things that I like to do is I like to build things. I like to build companies. And so I've actually identified some voids in the industry that I think I could fill. And when I do have free time, I'm kind of tinkering and experimenting to try to potentially introduce a new product.
Do you want to tell us what those voids are?
Well, my theory, like I said, my theory is in the future, healthcare and security are going to be the big frontiers. The other, as you guys mentioned, is AI and ML. And as you know, most of the cloud or the big five companies have gobbled up a massive amount of talent, pulled them from universities, PhDs, et cetera. And so in the future, as companies are going to want to compete and they'll need machine learning, they're probably going to use a cloud-based solution like Textract from Amazon or Document AI from Google. And you see these cloud vendors starting to specialize and have industry-specific solutions. Well, in my past company, we were in the US mortgage space, but we were an AI processor of documents and would extract data from documents or classified documents to automate some of the workflow in home loans. Well, One of the challenges that we recognized was you can never get 100% accuracy. So we had a large team in a 24-hour call center that were analyzing our extracted data and correcting the documents to get to that automation quality data. And one of the things that we discovered was that you can increase the potential for accuracy by increasing the quality of the documents that you're submitting. And so my thought is, as companies are moving towards cloud hosted AI solutions, they're going to be wasting a lot of money. And so assume you spend 6.5 cents per page with Document AI and you're processing 1 million pages a month. And you find out that 20% of them are low quality because your image quality was poor. And so you're wasting $13,000 a month and, you know, for the $65,000 bill. So my thought is, what if you could detect in advance and alert or flag the records that may or may not come back with a successful result? And in doing so, you could save these companies from that $13,000 a month in waste. And then just say, well, for everything I help save you, give me a percentage.
Right.
And so that's kind of the thinking, and have actually had some successes in prototypes and looking to potentially commercialize that in the future.
Awesome. Sweet answer. Yeah, that's awesome. Where can people follow along with you, and where can people listen to more of your awesome ideas and or hear more about what you're doing?
Obviously, you can follow me on Twitter. It's just at Mike Spar, MikeSpar, or on LinkedIn and just search for me. Another is Doit International's blog, and that's blog.doit, Brett-intl.com. And not only myself, but like I mentioned, the breadth of talent that we have on our team. We're publishing probably every week or every other week some amazing articles and content. So I think you'll find yourself immersed pretty quickly in the content on our blog.
Awesome. I think that's about it. That's about the time we have for today. I just want to say thank you so much for coming on. It's been super interesting to learn from you and to hear about what you've done. It sounds like it's all come full circle. There was one unanswered question I never really got, which was, do your parents regret that you're not fixing cars in the garage?
No, I think my chosen career path was probably inevitable. And now we'll just see what happens with my kids. They're glued to their tablets and playing Minecraft and Roblox. So who knows? They're probably going to be the ones teaching me things here in the not too distant future.
And or leasing virtual land, just like your parents did once again. Thank you so much again. It was awesome to have you on here. And good luck with everything.
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.